Hey everyone, this is Adam Ellenboss from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody. Today we're going to take a look at the new moon in Taurus, which is coming through tomorrow. And we're going to look at some of the main features of this moon cycle and why I think it's one of the most auspicious, if not the most auspicious, moon cycle of the year. So that is our agenda for today. Before we get into it, don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments and reflections if you have them to share. We love hearing from you guys. You can find a transcript of any of my daily talks on the website, nightlightastrology.com. I'm going to take you over there right now for a couple of promotions before we get into our content. So you can look onto the events page, click on live talks, and see that on May 16th, my next monthly webinar is coming up. I'm going to be looking at Neptune and Aries. I've subtitled this When the Ocean Turns Red. We're going to be looking at the meaning of Neptune changing signs into Aries next year, sort of sneak preview that, and give you a sense of what you might expect from this change on an archetypal level. In June, I'm doing a talk on the 12th house and the healing potential of the 12th house in your birth chart. And in July, I am sneak previewing Uranus's entrance into Gemini, the two major outer planetary shifts we're expecting in the next year. You can register for those talks. The Neptune and Aries talk is on May 16th from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. When you register, if you cannot attend the live webinar, you'll get a recording of it later. So be sure to sign up now. If you go to the shop page, you can see some of the more recent talks we've done, some of the masterclass bundles I've done. You can get access to the book I'm writing before it's in published form. So a lot of cool things there on the shop page. Go to the courses page. First year course starts June 16th, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, our first year course in ancient Hellenistic astrology. We always infuse all of our programs with archetypal psychological astrology, because that's a big part of my background. But this is a course for people who want to learn about the ancient spiritual and philosophical foundations of natal astrology and really develop some great skills, whether you want to go professional or it's just your hobby. At the bottom of the page, you will find the early bird sale, which goes until May 15th. And we also have an early bird installment plan, which you can use to spread out the tuition across 12 months. We also have need-based tuition. So if you're someone who really wants to take the program, but you're working in a fixed budget, we understand that people are coming from different backgrounds. So we make that sliding scale available for people who could use it. And we ask people to reflect on their situation and only use it if they really need it. But yeah, you can choose your own amount when you apply. And then we match you with a plan that fits your budget. So that is there for people. We like to make sure no one's priced out. All right. Well, on that note, let us turn our attention now to this new moon in Taurus and some of the most exciting features of the new moon in Taurus. I think this is maybe the most subjectively positive looking of the moon cycles of 2024. I'll tell you why I think that. But, you know, it really depends on where things are falling in your birth chart for most of us. So, but I'll tell you what I think this one looks so good. Anyway, the new moon is coming through tomorrow. That's May 7th. I have it around 10:30 p.m. Central time. So time zone may, you know, may vary a little bit. But that new moon is coming through tomorrow night. And then the new moon cycle runs, let's see, we get first quarter around May 14th. We get the full moon, which will be actually in Sagittarius coming through right around May 23rd, 22nd to the 23rd. And then we go forward and we get that last quarter moon right around May 30th or the very end of the month. And then the next new moon in Gemini, which will be on June 6th, I believe it comes through. Yeah. So anyhow, that's a really big cycle ahead. And so I'm just going to back this up, get our new moon there. There are five features that I have written down to talk about today that I think make this new moon pretty spectacular. A lot of it has to do with the way in which this moon cycle is carrying forth the promise of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. There's only one feature of this cycle that I think could be a little, might take a little bit of patience or some doing, because there may be one difficult feature of this cycle. But generally speaking, I think this cycle looks really great, and I'm going to tell you why. So first of all, number one feature is that we've got an exalted new moon. Remember that the job of the moon from month to month and cycle to cycle is to weave the web of fortune. We tend to think of the moon in modern psychological terms as the reflection of our emotions or our something of our psychological nature, which is fine if you're doing a psychological analysis. But for ancient astrologers, the main signification of the moon, its broadest universal philosophical meaning, was that it was the ruler of fortune. The material world was thought of as the world of fortune, insofar as it is a world that reflects the moving forms of eternity, the archetypes in bodies and forms that come into being and pass out of being. It's a realm of mortality. It's a realm of impermanence. It's a realm of change, fluctuation. And so it was called the Wheel of Fortune, this world was. And the moon was the emblem of that Wheel of Fortune because her face waxes and wanes, fills up and empties. Her latitude changes up and down. She's like a snake moving around the ecliptic. And she makes aspects from one planet to another. So effectively, she was thought of as like the web weaver of this realm of constant change and fluctuation. Insofar as destiny or fate is being woven into our lives every single day, it's doing so by the light of the moon and by the aspects of the moon and by the various stages of the moon cycle every month, from new moon and the seeding to full moon and the blossoming. We can't understand anything from all of the major planetary cycles we track. Like this year, we've got a Jupiter-Saturn square. We've just had a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. It's only as good, our ability to understand those events are only as good as our ability to understand moon cycles, because the moon cycles are really where we see the sort of nuances and specifics of larger planetary dynamics playing out. They have to find their way into a very daily ecosystem that we live in. And that's the one that the moon is orchestrating on a symbolic level. So when there's an exalted new moon, doesn't mean like, oh, everything's going to be great. We have to ask what it means that the moon is exalted. First of all, it's very happy in the sign of Taurus, this second sign of the light half of the year, second sign of spring, so to speak, zodiacally, because the light is on the rise. And both luminaries are exalted and have their domiciles on the light half of the year. And so they're happy in places where light is now dominating in terms of the waxing and waning of light throughout the entire year, as seen from the Northern Hemisphere. So the moon loves the middle of spring because the light's on the rise and life is proliferating. And subjectively speaking, what defines good fortune for us? You know, like how do we as human beings, and just generally like creatures, what do they seem to enjoy or what makes them happy? Ease, peace, some level of gratification of the senses. Like, does my body feel good? Do I feel safe and stable? Is there a natural way in which I can harmonize with different energies, people, and things in the environment, as opposed to experiencing discordancy or chaos or conflict? So peacefulness, ease, a sense of gratification or enjoyment on the sensual level, a sense of stability, harmonization. When you have all of those things working, I don't know many people who aren't happy. You know what I mean? Like, if you have those features as a part of your experience, you're usually feeling pretty good. And this is why this is the solid, earthy sign of Venus, the sign of the cow or the bull. There's a sort of fecund, heavy, simple, happy, sensually embodied quality to the sign of Taurus. Now, those same qualities have been at work in the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic. The Jupiter-Uranus dynamic, the conjunction that's just happened around April 20th in the sign of Taurus, has been about continuing to emphasize, or it's been about amplifying those qualities and demanding that there be some kind of revolution in our lives in the name of, or for the sake of, those desires, those desired outcomes: peace, ease, luxury, wealth, simplicity, joy. And by wealth, I don't necessarily, I mean, some people are in Taurus, like some people will define ease, harmony, sensual gratification through, you know, greed, wealth, power, lust, sex appeal, whatever. There, because it can be a real dark side to all of this too. But let's say you're someone who's, you know, working on the spiritual level of your existence, you're doing that work. This is truly about, how does my life become more harmonious, embodied, simple, easy, peaceful, harmonizing? You know, how do I find that flow state? How do I feel like I'm aligned in an earthy way, you know? And so when we're doing that at its best with virtue in mind, life feels safe, stable, easy, peaceful, happy, enjoyable, all of those qualities. This is why the moon is exalted in Taurus, because it tends to be conducive to those results. So first of all, we have a moon cycle that's fantastic when it comes to supporting those things. Any moon cycle that starts off in Taurus is usually in the year, we're going to find that some of those qualities are being amplified, and depending on where it's at in our chart and what else is going on, of course. But so yay. However, we have to remember that these qualities are also in support of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, that revolutionary opening that's been trying to amplify and create more of these Taurian virtues and values. It's like, yes, Jupiter-Uranus is like, let's revolutionize our lives so that more of these qualities are amplified. Okay, so now we have a new moon cycle, an exalted new moon supporting that. That's what makes this so exciting and subjectively positive. Number two is that this takes place, and let's pull up the chart again. This takes place in Jupiter's bound, the new moon does, and Venus's domicile while both are co-present. So not only do we have an exalted new moon in Taurus supporting the Jupiter-Uranus dynamic, but we also have this taking place in the bound of Jupiter and in the domicile of Venus, and Jupiter's in Taurus and Venus is in Taurus. So we have this new moon in its own power, great in its exaltation, but also sort of in the powers of the benefics who are co-present, right? So that's nice. That is a really nice quality because it's everything that we just described is a way of saying what we've just said. A different way of saying it is that in the temple of Venus, the moon is exalted. It's a way of saying Venus and all of the Taurian temple qualities, this zoideon, this portion of the heavenly wheel, exalts the moon. It means that it really amplifies all of these qualities of Venus and Taurus, really amplify the most beautiful preferences of the moon. Okay, so now we have Venus co-present with the moon, which means she's there in the temple, in her own power and glory, able to further support this new moon. That's what makes it even more subjectively positive. While the new moon is in Jupiter's bound, which means it has to pay kind of like a homage to Jupiter, and it's bound in some ways by Jupiter's situation. We're going to talk more about that in a second, because that's maybe the one difficult part of this cycle. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Jupiter's also co-present. And just going through the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, this means that this new moon cycle is sort of bound to the principles of Jupiter and Uranus, the desire and impetus for this kind of Taurian revolution, and it's bound to that, but Jupiter's co-present. It's right there. Venus is right there. So there's a ton of support. But you see how the overall idea that I'm trying to get across here is that this is a moon cycle that is tremendously supportive from the benefics, with a benefic, well-dignified moon at the start of the cycle. And it's really trying to carry forward the intentions of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction that just happened in a very supportive and positive way. Number three is that Venus is in her own chariot. So you might notice, some people may notice if they look carefully, that Venus is only 8 degrees from the sun, which means that technically she's entering the combustion range where she's burnt up by the sun. She's invisible as she's starting to make the shift back into evening star position, which will happen by later in July, but the Kazemi will happen in early June before the next cycle. So Venus is going through a transformation, a death and rebirth as she rises into the evening star position. But that's where she's happy. The evening star position is like the more feminine position, and she's in her own domicile. And because she's in her own domicile, she's in her own chariot, which means that she's protected from the kind of more afflicting qualities of combustion. So this is nice because Venus is able to continue supporting this new moon cycle as she's undergoing a transformation, and to do so without being majorly compromised. Now, what does that speak to? The fact that Venus is going through a reset as Jupiter and Uranus has just tried to provide some kind of revolutionary reset in the sign of Taurus. You see how everything's pointing toward this kind of major shift with respect to all of the Taurian and Venusian values. And we see that reiterated by the fact that Venus is going through the combustion and rising as the evening star as the summer goes on. So this is just fantastic. We're really, I mean, compared to how difficult the initial planetary configurations were around eclipse season and around the initial conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus, where Venus, the ruler, was debilitated in Aries. You had the Aries eclipses with Mars debilitated with Saturn in Pisces. Now things are just so much easier. I mean, Mars is in its own sign too, right? And Venus is now in her own sign, and she's protected from the combustion. So even though she's resetting, which again amplifies the same kind of reset Jupiter and Uranus indicate, she's protected from the worst of the reset. Okay, so hopefully that's not too technical. Now, the other thing, now this is maybe the one challenging part of the cycle, is that Jupiter is separating from Uranus within 3 degrees, which is that engagement range that ancient astrologers looked at. So again, we have the promise of this cycle really continuing to bring forth the fruit of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction from late April. But this cycle also shows us that Jupiter is going through a combustion. So at the outset of this cycle, Jupiter is under the beams of the sun, combust, and Jupiter is going through that synodic reset, which happens by about the 18th of May. So let's take this forward a little bit. We can look at the 18th of May, and you can see here's Jupiter and the sun conjoining. This is Jupiter being reborn, and it's doing so as Venus is also coming through the conjunction with Uranus and a conjunction to Jupiter. So again, really what we're saying here is that both Venus and Jupiter are going through synodic resets. Venus is able to provide a lot of support and is protected from the worst of it while in Taurus. And now Jupiter's not as protected by virtue of, you know, it's not in its own chariot, so it is going to be sort of burnt up and reborn. But should we really be that scared of Jupiter going through a death and rebirth, coming off from the Uranus conjunction, and as we see Venus also heading into a very benefic conjunction with Jupiter right after the sun crosses it? No, I don't think so. I think that maybe the most difficult part about this cycle is the synodic reset of Jupiter. But everything this cycle is telling us is really nothing more than, hey, look, you remember that Jupiter-Uranus conjunction? You're going to see so much more momentum and positivity and support in favor of what that conjunction represented playing out. Yes, Venus and Jupiter have to go through these resets, but Venus is well protected and is helping sort of solidify everything. The new moon takes place in its own exaltation. Like, you just, there's so much more in the air about this cycle that suggests positivity, support, a kind of maturation and positive momentum following in the wake of Jupiter-Uranus's conjunction. Number five is, and I just sort of showed you guys this, but let's look at it more carefully. The other thing that's really important to notice is what Venus and the sun are doing with Uranus. So not only is Jupiter going through a death and rebirth, and Venus is in the process of doing that, but protected in her own chariot, but look at what happens. So right around May 13th, 12th into the 13th, the sun will conjoin Uranus. So again, amplifying the Uranus-Jupiter conjunction by first hitting Uranus and then carrying the light into a conjunction with Jupiter by the 18th. So the sun is really, again, helping the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction crystallize. And you can see that because around May 13th, we've got the conjunction between the two. And then just a few days later, sun will get together with Jupiter. And oh, look, at that time, Venus is conjoining Uranus. So now you have Venus going through the conjunction to Uranus as sun is going through the conjunction to Jupiter. And then as the sun enters Gemini, you're going to see Venus conjoin Jupiter at that final degree, and then both will enter Gemini. So it really is like, it's such a dynamic, interesting cycle. And at every stage of the cycle, you just keep seeing the reiteration of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in Taurus. This cycle is all about starting to magnify and bring forth the promise of that major conjunction. So anyway, I hope this made enough sense and that you're able to follow it. Remember, broadly speaking, look at that whole sign house of Taurus in your birth chart. Look back to the May horoscopes that Alex and I did if you didn't seen those already. And remember that what behind all of this in Jupiter, in Taurus, what has been, you know, what's the goal been? And the goal has been a reordering, that's Jupiter-Uranus, a revolution, a shift and a change and an opening with new possibilities, but in the name of what? All of the things that the stable, earthy sign of the bull, the cow, Venus's sign enjoys, which is, you know, a kind of stable, steady, peaceful, easy, enjoyable, sensual, embodied quality. That can look different for every person and in every different area of life that it expresses itself in and through our charts, but that's what it's all about. And this cycle carries forth so much of the promise of those desires that we've been working with, and the need for some kind of shift in the name of all of these qualities that we've been experiencing. Okay, I'm going to leave it there. After I sign off, remember, stick around. You'll hear me for, I think it's like maybe 8 to 10 minutes. I'm going to take you into the I'm going to take you into the new program that I have coming up on June 16th, the first year course in ancient Hellenistic astrology. Listen, with Jupiter entering the sign of Hermes and trining Pluto in Aquarius and coming off the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, it is a very good time for the study of astrology to really grab hold and be comprehended. I don't say that for every single program. I don't try to artificially marry certain transits to studying. Once in a while, though, I do, because there's just certain transits that are really good for studying astrology. The airy matching of Jupiter and Gemini and Pluto and Aquarius that's getting started late May into June as our next program starts is a very auspicious one for studying the ancient science of Hermes under. So I encourage you to check it out. Come study with us, whether your intention is professional or just personal. There's a lot that this program offers for everybody. So I hope you'll enjoy it. Hope to see you in class soon. And I hope you guys have a great moon cycle to come. Take it easy. Bye. Hey everyone, thanks for sticking around. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our upcoming program, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, my year one course in ancient Hellenistic astrology that begins on June 16th. If you'd like to learn more about it, of course, you can always do some digging and looking at the course page on your own. I'll take you over there right now and walk you through it. But if you want to, you can go over yourself and look. Nightlightastrology.com is the website. Click on the courses tab and go to the first year course. This is the one that begins on June 16th, the perfect place to start for people who would like to learn more about natal astrology from the Hellenistic point of view. So this is a one-year course in Hellenistic astrology, which is the oldest form of astrology, and it is the form from which all subsequent forms of astrology come from. It shares a lot in its roots with ancient Indian astrology. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what characterizes Hellenistic astrology, but just to familiarize you with this page, when you go to the first year course page and scroll down, you can learn more about everything that's included in the course. Some of the main features include 30 classes on the year. These classes are spread out through units of curriculum. And in between the major units of curriculum, we have breakout study sessions led by our tutoring staff. We also have an interactive group forum discussion that is staffed with tutors year-round. You always get your questions answered within 24 hours. So there's a lot of support built into the program as we work our way through the curriculum. We also have recommended reading, listening, optional quizzes, flashcards, bonus lectures, more than you could possibly read in a year, honestly. So we just have a large and long biography and sort of library of suggested bonus content that will fill in blanks and also supplement and deepen the material that we are studying. You get lifetime access to all the recordings. If you cannot attend the webinars live, they meet on the weekends, but if you can't attend them live, then you are welcome to follow along with the recordings, which are made available to you on the class website. So this class meets on Sundays from noon Central to 2 p.m. Central or 1 Eastern to 3 p.m. Eastern time. And you might translate that, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, it would be what, 10 a.m. to noon Pacific time. During the program, in addition to working our way through all of the major curriculum, the major foundational elements of Hellenistic astrology, we place a strong emphasis on preparing ourselves to read charts for other people. Whether this is a hobby for you or something that you are endeavoring to practice professionally, the course is built for people who are really there for a lot of different reasons. This is your hobby. This is your passion. You hope to do this for really no one other than yourself or maybe friends or family or someone who really decides they want to start a practice. You can take this class at whatever level of interest or depth that you want because of the amount of material that we make available to you inside and outside of class. You always have access to the program too, so you can always, you know, take it at your own pace. You can attend live, follow along with the recordings, some combination of both. And then the breakout study sessions are really helpful in addition to our interactive group forum discussion. You can always ask us questions. You can email me anytime with questions. So we have a lot of support in place. Now, the curriculum, we move through the foundational elements of ancient astrology. You may look at the curriculum and say, well, I know something about these things already, but not really, unless you've studied Hellenistic astrology, because the way that ancient astrologers talked about houses, signs, planets, aspects, essential dignities, chart delineation is radically different from what most people learn when they start studying modern astrology. The reason for that is that it's only been in the past couple of decades that we have finally had access to the vast majority of ancient texts on Hellenistic astrology. We were literally missing the bulk of our ancient tradition. So the kind of rebirth or reawakening of ancient astrology is really new, which makes this very exciting because everything you've learned in modern astrology is probably coming from the lens of what is called psychological astrology, which is a way of looking at the birth chart in terms of the planet signs, houses, and the way in which they may relate to your psychological makeup or profile. In this way, birth charts are a little bit like an elaborate Myers-Briggs. So you have the personality profiling, which is the way that most people look at planets, houses, and signs. You'll notice my Mars, my Venus, and they think of them as aspects or dimensions of your character and personality. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, we utilize much of the same language, and we certainly have that approach available to us in this program because ancient astrologers also looked at the chart in terms of psychological makeup. However, one of the main distinctions between modern astrology and ancient astrology is the emphasis that ancient astrologers placed on prediction. They looked at the chart in terms of a field of karma that defines the native or the individual's fate or destiny. And so we look at houses, signs, planets, aspects as a way of understanding what patterns, themes, and topics are going to be most prevalent and at what times, because they also had a very elaborate system of timing techniques. The year one program is all about learning to read the birth chart and understanding the ancient hermetic sort of Platonic Pythagorean philosophy that was behind the establishment of all of the doctrines and teachings of astrology itself. So it's really about understanding where everything comes from. It's the why behind everything that greatly empowers people when they're learning astrology. It is not nearly the same when you just study lists of adjectives and descriptions for houses, signs, planets, aspects. We want to understand why. Why do we do these things at all? Where did it all come from? And when you understand that, then you have something like a skeleton key by means of which you can access your own creativity, your own intuition, rather than being told, just play these notes in this order and it will sound good. You're learning to improvise, which, you know, could anyone ever want to play? Why would you want to play an instrument if someone told you, well, here's how to play. Play this, play this, play that. And you never learned how to play something of your own, or you never learned how to use the scales in ways that were magical and, pertain to your own genie, your own genius. So when we study ancient astrology, one of the main things we're doing is we're taking people beyond anything that they think they've learned about houses, signs, planets, aspects, and we're teaching them where it all came from. And once you have that, then you're really cooking with fire. You have a magical, intuitive capacity that is very rare and precious in astrology. So anyway, we move through a lot of different elements, but not in the way that you've ever learned them before. And that's a really important distinction. So anyway, after all of that has been said, in each unit, we spend, maybe up to 10 hours on houses. And then we have a breakout study session. And then we have reading and bonus material. So when we talk about houses in this class, you are learning where the concept of a house ever came from in the first place, what it is, how it works, and how it's different from a sign. You're also going to unlearn and break a lot of bad habits, because not by any intentional ignorance, but modern astrology, being bereft of its ancient textual tradition, has been teaching a lot of things that are just not in line with where the actual theoretical foundations of astrology come from. So you're also going to break some bad habits, which is really good for people who maybe know a little bit about astrology already, but are seeking to clarify and understand theory in the context of the 2000 year history of astrology. So anyway, this class is going to prepare you to read birth charts for other people. But then by the end, one of the great things about the program is that the way we do that is not just by pumping you full of theory and history and philosophy. We are also in the last portion of the program inviting live clients into the class. And that's great, because when we have live clients come in, you're going to see me read from them using the theory and techniques that we've been studying. And you're going to see how they can be applied artfully, as well as, giving you some tools and methods and techniques to use to set you up for success. Seeing live astrology practice while studying it is the best way to learn. So the last portion of the program, we turn toward that hands-on approach. Anyway, so that's a bit about the program. If you have any questions you want to ask, email us info@nightlightastrology.com. We're happy to answer any questions you have whatsoever. I also want to point people to the payment options at the bottom. Early bird payment saves you $500 off. That is a great way to save. The payment plan is breaking the tuition into 12 monthly installments. If that works better for you, no worries, you can do that. And then need-based tuition. We, for many, many years now, dating back to 2010 when I started teaching astrology, I've always had some kind of sliding scale option available for people when studying astrology. Sacred science like this should be accessible to people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. So we pride ourselves on making sure that there is tuition assistance available so that if your budget doesn't match with the payment price that we ask for, and that's an honest assessment that we trust you to make, that you can take advantage of the tuition assistance and set your price within a sliding scale that we provide for your monthly tuition for 12 months through the program. So please feel free to apply for that if it makes sense to you. We don't want people hurting themselves or overextending themselves. A price that fits your budget is available through the need-based tuition. We just ask that you apply early because we do fill up sometimes. So anyway, that is it. I hope that you will consider studying with us, and thanks for taking time to learn more about the program. See you later.